Welcome to everyone listening all around the world, all across the United States, hither and thither, to and fro, back and forth, up and down, east and west, near and far. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. And tonight we have one of those shows. Heading into the morning, you are just going to want to get comfortable, get that drink, that late night beverage that makes you comfortable. Get close to those speakers, because tonight we have two guests on Coast to Coast that some may find them controversial, you know, but they are steadfast in their message and research, and we're going to be going deep into conversation. And of course, later we'll be taking your calls. First up tonight, Stuart Swerdlow will be joining us. And he's an experiencer since childhood. He has the ability to see auric fields, lifetimes of the past, present, and future. And he also appears in a new film called Montauk Chronicles. We'll be going through all of that tonight with Stuart. Next, Mike Barra joins us, who will share the latest of his findings on NASA data regarding the existence of Planet X or even Planet Y. And he also has a new book coming out entitled Ancient Aliens and Secret Societies, two of my favorite subjects to talk about. All of this on the eve of the greatest sporting event in the U.S. tomorrow. The Seattle Seahawks are facing the New England Patriots in Phoenix and for the Super Bowl, which means you're probably taking tomorrow off and you're spending tonight with us because you've got nothing to do tomorrow. But right here on Coast to Coast AM, it's going to be a great night. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. I'll be back right after this. Stay with us. Welcome back. This is Coast to Coast AM. I am your host, Jimmy Church. Stuart Swerdlow is a gifted hyperspace intuitive. He moves his consciousness beyond time and space to determine your foundational mind pattern upon which all your life experiences are based. His great uncle, Yakov Swerdlov, was the first president of the Soviet Union, and his grandfather helped form the Communist Party in the United States in the 1930s. To ensure that his loyalty strayed and stayed with the U.S. government, he was recruited for specific mind control experiments, including 13 years at the Montauk Project, which enhanced his natural abilities. I would like to welcome back to Coast AM, Stuart Swerdlow. Stuart, how are you tonight, sir?
Thank you, Jimmy. I'm fine. I'm glad to be here.
Stuart, we're going to have one of those conversations that you and I have tonight where we're gonna go deep. And if you don't mind, for the audience out there, it's such an extraordinary family upbringing that you have with your family. Take us back to the Soviet Union and why the United States would have been so concerned, Washington, D.C., with your family and, of course, yourself as a child.
Well, that's a very, very long story, Jimmy, and I'm going to go back as far as I possibly can. And even I had mentioned to you once before that even the KGB was interested in that very topic of how my family could have had so much power.
And we can certainly, Stuart, discuss all of your coffee experiences with the KGB tonight, which every one of those is such an interesting story in itself. But take us back to the early days of the Soviet Union.
Yes, well, I'll go back a little bit before the Soviet Union and actually to my great-grandfather, who had 9 children and apparently groomed several of his children to get involved in politics to overthrow the Tsar and to create communism in the Soviet Union. And my great-uncle Yakov Sverdlov was actually the one who carried out and ordered the assassination of the Tsar and his family in the city of Yekaterinburg in the Ural Mountains. And subsequently, that city was named after my uncle in honor of him, Sverdlovsk, and the oblast, or the province, is called Sverdlovsk. And my grandfather was Yakov's brother. And he was sent first to Great Britain, especially especially Liverpool area, to create the Communist Party there. And when he became successful, then he moved on to the United States and formed it here. Then I had another uncle, Benjamin Sverdlov, who was sent to the United States just prior to World War I, and he actually opened the bank in New York that was Sverdlov Bank, that was open for several years, and he allegedly convinced the President of the United States to enter into World War I and to finance the Russian Revolution to overthrow the Tsar, the Romanov family in Russia. And that same uncle, Benjamin, returned to the Soviet Union and in the 1930s actually began mind control and programming in Russia, even before it happened anywhere else. Now, Yakov's son, who was my cousin, started the KGB after the revolution. My family has had quite a bit of entrenchment in Soviet and Russian government and in other parts of the world as well.
You had mentioned to me the other day, I want you to share this, you recently went back to the Soviet Union to do some stuff, and you approached the ticket counter, and they heard your last name, and craziness ensued. What happened?
That actually occurred in the airport here in the United States. And as soon as I went to the counter to check in for the flight, they said, "You are Sverdlov?" And I said, "Yes, of course." I didn't know if they were going to, you know, arrest me or shoot me. But then they escorted me. They had a guard come and escort me to a private lounge. And they said, "You will wait here until the plane leaves, and we will take you on board." And they did. They came and picked me up. They took me around security. They stopped everybody, pushed me right through, then escorted me right to the door of the aircraft where they were waiting inside for me with caviar and vodka. And then when the plane landed in Moscow, I was asked to exit first, and there were people waiting at the door of the plane for me, who escorted me through immigration and security and out into the world there.
And the first thing that comes to mind when you hear this is, if that experience happened just recently, how long has the KGB had their eyes on you and your family?
Oh, they've never taken their eyes off of it. And, you know, these days they're supposedly called the FSB, but everybody in Russia knows it's still the KGB.
And are they kind? Are they treating you with respect, or are the eyes just wide open on all of your moves, or is it both?
Well, it's both. You know, I'm watched everywhere I go, and I'm sure it's American as well, not just the Russian. But, yeah, they are okay with me. They're kind with me. They've never done anything that I know of to hurt me. They do occasionally will give me some information that I verify, of course, to find out what's behind the scenes. And it's been a very interesting, especially when I travel overseas, you always can tell who they are. And it's kind of really funny because they don't try to disguise themselves. And especially in Russia, all the male KGB agents will be wearing black leather jackets and black pants, and they'll just, and black sunglasses, and they just walk around. And it's the same people everywhere I go.
Now, with all of this knowledge that is opening up for you with the KGB in this recent trip, let's go back to your childhood, and with this Russian connection here in the United States, did it affect your childhood, and was there any surveillance from the Soviet Union in, you know, in some pretty crazy times here in the United States, certainly through World War I and World War II? What was it like growing up, and was there the Russian, I want to say this correctly, was there a shadow over the family?
Yes, there was a shadow over the family, and, you know, especially during the Nixon years, and even a little before that, our phones were always tapped, and they still are. mail has been opened and then returned to the mailbox. They really don't make a secret of what they're doing, and of course, I understand that. I've been interrogated many times, asked about my loyalty, what would I do if the U.S. was invaded, who would I support. I have been pulled into a bathroom in a government building here, shown Soviet aerial photographs of Area 51 and asked to explain it. Things like that have happened. And of course, my father was interrogated extensively as well here in the United States, and he actually worked in an underground base outside of El Paso during the 1950s.
With the mind control programs that were going on in the Soviet Union that your family was directly involved in, do you think that possibly that those experiments and that knowledge was handed down to you as a child?
I would say absolutely. When I found out from the KGB that my great uncle was the one who started mind control in the Soviet Union, it's as if things started clicking in my head as to why I became involved in the Montauk Project here, and even involved with the subsequent neo-Nazi experiments in the United States and elsewhere. And I also know that my grandmother, my father's mother, was a Soviet spy during World War II, and after she passed away, my father found hidden in her bedroom and locked up in some drawers photographs of her with Nazi soldiers, apparently blackmailing them. And, of course, my father was so disturbed by all of that, he says he burned all the pictures.
And with your family dealing with mind control, could you tell that something maybe was going on with your own parents and the way that you were being brought up? What was that atmosphere like?
It was very strange. Yes, indeed. My father was very silent most of the time. He never ever wanted to discuss his family or the situation at the time in Soviet Union. And my mother, and she's passed on, and I forgive her for everything that's happened, but she used to take me every week to both a dentist and a doctor who performed some very horrible surgeries on me and examinations on me, which left my body scarred. So I've had to release all of that over the years.
Have you talked to your father about your childhood?
Well, no, because he doesn't speak. He just doesn't speak about anything. Very typical Russian stoicism, and no emotion. However, several years ago, apparently, he was in some kind of frame of mind, he told my sister about his experience in the United States with the government here and the secret experiments and being followed after my birth for several years as they tracked him and myself. And he actually admitted that to my sister, but he has not said nothing to me.
And, now as an adult, and you can reflect back through your experiences, certainly in your younger years, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, you were being tailored. And you could tell probably now that things were going on when it comes to mind control and a possible manipulation at a very young age.
Correct. And in fact, my birth was strange as well, because I was told I was told I was a manipulation. I should not have existed as such. When my mother went to into labor with me, and she went to be examined, she was told it was impossible for her to become pregnant because she had no birth canal. And she actually was taken to a hospital that was not yet opened. It was under construction. In fact, there was no heat on in that time. And they had to perform a surgery on her to create a birth canal in order for me to be born. And it just so happened that there was a surgeon in the area who had traveled who knew how to do this. I mean, just at that moment. And supposedly this is written in medical books.
At what point did you start to notice that you had a talent? Was it before your first encounter?
Well, you know, when you're young, I'm talking like a toddler and a little bit above, you don't realize that other people can't see and feel and hear the things that you do. You think everybody does. And so when I would talk about seeing people appear or people who had passed on, whom I didn't know had passed on, and would talk to me, and I would tell people about what they said, you know, that was normal to me, but other people thought it was quite odd. And I noticed that from even 3 years old, when I had a very strange experience where I was taken in some kind of a craft by a creature who was just about my size, and I was about 3 or 4 years old. And there was nothing inside this disc-like craft. It was two floors. I remember going from the first floor to the second floor and just flying around the earth and looking out through the wall. It was a wall, but you could see through it. And this creature was very plant-like, kind of a greenish color, but grayish-green, didn't have any emotion. You know, now many years later, I realize it was an alien being, but very plant-like, not very animalistic.
The normal reaction of any child, of course, myself, is you're going to run the next day and go talk to your mom or your dad. How did they react to such a fantastical story?
Well, they were very used to my stories of what would happen to me at night. I mean, it happened almost every night. And this particular event left me with something inside my ear. I remember trying to recreate that when I was playing in the living room the next day or so, and I would take a little piece of paper, roll it up into a ball, because that's what I saw this creature put in my head, in my ear, through my ear. And ultimately, I had to be taken to an ear, nose, and throat doctor to have my sinuses opened and my ear eustachian tubes opened up, because everything started to clog up in me.
Was that doctor in on it too, if you know what I mean?
Well, you know, now I know that he was, and there was more than one of them. But yeah, I mean, imagine being taken to a private house in the middle of the night, going up to an attic room, and there is a little surgery room set up, and they just do surgery on my nose and my sinuses, and it's very interesting that when I remember it, how they were dressed in that old-fashioned medical kind of European-style clothing, and no anesthesia, really, and quite difficult. And I used to hemorrhage a lot from my nostrils, and I actually up until recently. So I have had a lot of damage to that part of my head.
What were you doing to get someone to understand or maybe even believe, you know, these encounters at such a young age? If your parents weren't buying into it, if you know what I mean, what were you doing? Did you feel trapped, or did you not have any friends at all?
I had no friends because I could not associate with other people. I was in a frame of mind where during my experiences and after the things I've learned from them, even as a child, I felt like everything around me was quite primitive. I felt like people were not very aware. They didn't know what was going on. They wouldn't listen to what I was saying. So I basically kept to myself, you know, and I would read books or just play in my room. When my grandmother would visit, I was able to talk to her because she was open to these kinds of things. But other than that, I basically kept to myself.
And when we come back, we're going to take a break here in just a second. But when we come back, I would like to get into your first encounter. Because, and the reason for all of this setup for the audience is because all of this, everything that went with not only Montauk, but everything for the rest of your life, set up for your life journeys today and the way that you deal and help other people, not only with past lives and future lives, but reincarnation and auras and visions and the ability to see things such as DNA. This is Coast to Coast AM. More with Stuart Swerdlow when we come back after this. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. You can follow me right now on Twitter, at JChurchRadio. I'm watching Twitter as we speak. We'll be back right after this. Stay with us. Welcome back to Coast AM. I am your host, Jimmy Church. You can follow me right now on Twitter, at JChurchRadio. And I've got it right here to my left, and I'm checking out some stuff. Stuart, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but Arturo just said in Twitter, he says, Stuart knows about another Hadron Collider in Aurora, Illinois. What's that about?
Yeah, it's part of Fermi Labs, just west of Chicago. And it is an adjunct or sister collider to the one in Geneva, the Hadron Collider. And they're actually considering building another one outside of Tokyo, which I think is a very big mistake. But these things are designed to connect to alternate realities and even collapse parallel universes into this one, where the Illuminati have gained power and have achieved their goals. And so they are trying to enhance their position energetically here by doing so.
How close are we to an actual micro singularity, black hole, time travel type situation with these colliders?
Oh, they've done that for decades already. You know, they basically can do anything at this point.
We're going to come back to that in the last segment, and we're going to go deep with that. It's one of the most fascinating subjects that that we need to cover tonight. Let's get back to your childhood and your first experience with a little creature, as you described him. What happened that evening, and how long did it last?
It lasted quite a bit of time, because I remember I was over the clouds and flying everywhere, and it was as if I was being taken on a global tour. And of course, at the time, I had no idea about where anything on the earth was, being that age, but I remember seeing huge cities, iconic towers like the Eiffel Tower. I was shown mountains, the polar caps, oceans. It went on and on and on, and I remember it got so sick during this flight that I actually fell to the floor. I was nauseated. I had a headache. I did not feel well at all. And then I was brought back home, put back into my bed, when I promptly had a nosebleed and called my mother.
Were you scared, or did they do anything to comfort you?
There was never any comfort. I had many years of experiences similar to that. They had no emotion. They did not consider how I was feeling. They just had a mission, if you will, or they had something they had to do, and they just did it.
I've talked to other experiencers and contactees where they looked forward, you know, to their next encounter, that it was not a bad experience. It wasn't the same for you, was it?
No, I dreaded the night. I dreaded that they would come. And there was more than one species that would show up. It was not just one type of being. There were several different ones that occurred. But no, it was not a pleasant experience. It was not physically helpful at all. They have an agenda. I think with no disrespect to those other people, the ones who looked forward to those experiences and thought they were kind, I think that was part of their mind control that made them feel that way.
Help me understand what you were seeing. Were you seeing a typical reptilian, a Nordic? Were they short grays? All of the above, and what would your descriptions be?
Well, I would say they were all of the above, but there were four general types. One was the typical gray type that's become famous or popular. Then there was a very human-looking type. You couldn't tell a difference really between them and people on the Earth. Then there was the reptilian type, and then there were insectoid type. And unfortunately, I felt the most uncomfortable with those.
I meant to. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, the ones I experienced the most were these huge mantis-like creatures, who I found very disturbing. They emit this high-pitched chirping, which unnerved me, and I could not stand to be in their presence for very long.
With your family back in the Soviet Union, were they ever visited by ET of any kind?
My family there and
Yes.
I really don't know because I've never discussed it with them.
Okay. And what was the, I was just wondering if the communication continued through the Sverdlov family over time.
Well, I still have family there, and quite honestly, my family there is very cold and detached. Not very warm, fuzzy people. So I don't really have conversations with them. Sometimes I get an email from them, and they can be a bit terse. So I just keep the communication with them to a minimum.
And speaking of communication, how did you speak with the different species and races as a child?
Always it was mental communication. And it came very naturally. I just didn't even think about it. It just happened. And I feel it's because they initiated that and they were able to hear my thoughts. So it was a very simple procedure. Just think whatever you need to think or communicate, and it's received.
Was that the first time you realized you had a talent for this?
Well, I didn't realize it until a couple of years later as I got older when I found out that people don't do that. And so, I thought, yeah, that's a little different, a little unusual. And of course, when I got into the Montauk Project, that was blasted open even further through the experimentation.
Now, when you started the communication telepathically, now you wake up the next day and you know that you can do this. Were you able to, quite frankly, were you able to read somebody else's mind?
Yes, and that's kind of what I do now. I've had to learn to turn it off. It can be very uncomfortable. For example, several years ago, I was walking on the beach in Malibu with a person who was she used to be my manager at the time. And we went into she needed to use the restroom, so we went into a bar at the beach, and someone brushed past me, just in the hallway, and immediately I got the sensation that this person was going to be murdered, stabbed to death. So then the question is, what do? You go up to this stranger and say, "Hey, I think you're going to get murdered." They'll think that you're the one that's going to try to kill them. And so I talked to my manager about that, and she reminded me of my own work and said, "Well, since you can't physically do anything about it, send it up into Oversoul level, tell Oversoul to handle it in the best possible way for this person, and then you have to let it go."
What would have happened if you did say something? Are you able to change the future with a comment?
Well, the future is not cast in stone, and it all depends on the choices a person makes. So if you give information to an individual to help them make a decision, then there are possibilities into their future that can occur. However, always it's their choice. You can't force anyone to do one thing or another, because that's an imposition of will, and that energy will always come back on you if you try to do that.
You know, that's a pretty powerful tool that you have. What do you do? I'm going to ask you this directly. What do you do with your own morals and your choices that you make when not to use this?
Well, that's why when I do my consultation work, I ask permission first. I don't just go into it. And as I say, I spent a lot of years learning how not to pay attention, how to ignore information because it's bombarding all of the time. And if you paid attention to all of that, you'd never do anything else. So I needed to learn to center myself, ground and balance, keep a field of protection energy around me that filters the energy that comes into my sphere of energy. And so you learn to work with it in a positive way. You see, at the Montauk Project, this was used to impose will on others, to create mind control, to create scenarios that could be downloaded into computers and broadcast globally. And so they used it for nefarious purposes. However, energy is the energy. You can use it any way you like. So you could take the same energy and use it in a positive manner, which is what I do in my work here at Expansions.
Did ET or anybody else give you advice on how to deal with things morally, or were you left, to your own devices to figure out, your path in life and how to control this?
Well, several things. In one of my experiences, and I believe I wrote about it in my Montauk Alien Connection book, I was taken to, for lack of better terms, a platform that was orbiting the Earth. And on that platform were many different species that were there, congregating, if you will. It was almost like the bar scene in Star Wars, many different creatures and types. And they told me that they work with a few people on the earth, and a few could mean thousands, to help with their own agenda. In other words, they're not there to uplift mankind or to help human beings, because human beings are an experiment. We are not a natural race. We are a manufactured race. And they told me that their genetics are in many people on the earth, and that I personally had a whole bunch of genetics from different places, which is why I was being used in that manner. And as far as the earth is concerned and the alien beings here, they each have different agendas, and there are so many different races here. Both in our solar system, on our planet, on the moon, they're all over. And in addition to that, not just the physical alien beings, but there are also interdimensional beings who are not from this physical universe, but come from a parallel universe of different vibration.
Did they warn you, Stuart, that Montauk was in your future? Were you, being groomed by them? Because obviously they were involved in Montauk. Did they give you a warning? Did they tell you that Montauk was coming? Or was that
No.
just out of the blue?
Well, it kind of was out of the blue when I looked when I from my perspective then, but now looking back on it, I can see where things were leading up to it. However, I was not told that I would be part of that.
Are you angry about it?
No. I spent a lot of years being angry about a lot of things, and that only hurt me. So I had to release that and change my mind pattern so that I didn't allow that to affect me.
When we come back after the break, we're going to talk specifically about the new movie Montauk that you're in, and it is an extraordinary film by Christopher Garitano. So to kind of set that up, tell us about your first day there and how actually did they get you there? It's portrayed one way in the movie, but your personal experience was a little bit different. How did that happen?
Well, they have the ability to open wormholes, and that means to create a short path from point A to point B in physical reality. And so they basically connected to my bedroom and took me from there to the base. And when I was at the base, I remember being extremely frightened and actually running through hallways. It was kind of like a big warehouse. There was water dripping down the walls. There were armed guards. It was a very strange, dingy, dark place. And I remember I was not dressed, and I was running naked through the hallway, and I found this little alcove where I hid under a table, thinking that I had escaped these people and then try to figure a way to get out of this place. But I was discovered anyway, and recaptured, if you will, and then taken for other experiments.
What happened next?
Well, it was quite brutal because they would beat the children. They would. There was electric shock. There was sexual molestation. There was injections. Very brutal examinations. It was not pleasant at all.
Did you recognize anybody at Montauk, or were you completely isolated as far as not having a friend or a relationship with anybody? You were completely left on your own.
I didn't know anybody there, and I did see many children and young adults come in there over the years, but we never developed a relationship with anybody because it was just not done. You
What,
never had any emotional attachment to anyone.
you know, and for a child, that's got to be the most terrifying aspect for anybody to start some type of terror mind campaign against you is you are completely alone and you can't cry out for help because you don't know anybody or recognize anybody. And that was the case, wasn't it, for you and all of the other boys that were there?
Correct. And also, even if you did scream out, it didn't matter. Nobody heard or listened or paid attention to it. And it was a complete abject fear constantly. My memory of that time period was simply fear, and to the most extreme version of it.
Did the fear, Stuart, did it start on the very first day?
Oh, absolutely. Because I didn't know where it was. And people were doing things to me and chasing after me, and I had no way to get away from them or to find my way out of there.
Was there everybody refers to the Montauk boys. Was there ever a Montauk girl that you remember?
That's a very interesting question, and I've been asked that a lot over the years because of the way mind control and programming is set up. It is more beneficial to use male energies. However, females were used for breeding purposes and for sexual magic ritual. So, for those two events that occurred frequently, they did use the females for that, but not so much for the mind control experiments.
Hang on right there, Stuart. When we come back, we're going to talk about the new film, Montauk Chronicles, by Christopher Garitano. And then we'll talk about Stuart's current work and how he helps others through all of the trauma and traumatic and fear that experiences throughout his life, how he now applies that to help others. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Follow me right now on Twitter at JChurchRadio. You can also write me, Jimmy Church at coasttocoastam.com. We'll be back right after this. Stay with us.